The company's K-12 and Connections Education want to serve up to 6,000 students in North Carolina. One of the most contentious issues concerning these schools is academic quality. Many virtual charter students don't perform up to state standards. Mary Gifford with K-12 told the group that shouldn't reflect on the quality of education the schools offer.
This isn't for everybody. There's a finite universe of people who can be successful in this. It truly is a lifestyle choice.
In fact, she says only 40% of K-12's high school students are successful. Those are the ones who have the discipline and drive to work fairly independently. But Gifford says virtual charters attract a lot of kids who have a hard time staying on task, even with the daily face-to-face support of a teacher.
This isn't like the brick-and-mortar school where even if a student sits in the back row in Algebra 1 and sleeps every morning, as a teacher I can walk by and poke the kid, wake the kid up, and the kid's going to get something. In the virtual setting, I can't poke him.
She suggests allowing virtual charters to remove students who don't meet attendance requirements. That way, she says, kids who may be blowing off their classes because they need that extra poke don't languish in the online system. But then how do you judge attendance, since a student could always just log in and leave the room? Barbara Stoops is the director of a virtual charter in South Carolina. She's also part of the group figuring out how to evaluate these schools in North Carolina. She says one mistake South Carolina made was not coming up with a specific definition for attendance for online schools.
And as a result, there was one school with about 1,500 students who considered attendance by a very loose rule. And in one year with 1,500 students, they had a total of 4 absences that they were reporting to the state in Power School. That really makes it difficult for a school who tries to track attendance very carefully.
But be careful, says Greg Richmond. He's the director of the National Association of Charter School Authorizers. It's the association for groups that grant charters. He says attendance policies may be appropriate, but if you remove a student mid-course, that presents a payment issue.
If you're paying the virtual school up front for enrolling a kid, regardless of whether the child succeeds, then I worry about rules around removing kids from the program, you know, based on how many minutes they're online.
Richmond says it's better to pay virtual charters based on the number of students who complete courses.
That's why I think if you set it up that the school gets paid only if the kid succeeds. Well, now that provider has an incentive for success.
And the amount virtual charters receive for students is another big question the state must tackle. Brick and mortar charter schools get the money for each student that otherwise would have gone to that student's local school district. On average, that's about $8,500 in North Carolina. Both K-12 and Connections Education say it makes sense to pay them the same, because they say they have comparable expenses as brick-and-mortar charters. The Virtual Charter Study Group includes district superintendents, charter school educators, and advocates for charter and home schools. They'll present their recommendations on how to evaluate online charters to the State Board of Education in March, and then pass them on to state lawmakers. For WFAE News, I'm Lisa Miller.